This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 421 of Shutters Inc.
Nope.
Hello?
Nope, it's not episode 421.
Oh, it isn't?
I'm changing the naming format.
Well, you can change the name, but it doesn't change the number.
It does to me.
Okay.
It's no longer episode 421.
Right.
We're calling this the Troy Casper episode.
Okay, then.
You may ask why.
I probably wouldn't, but regale us with your story.
We got an email from Troy this week.
We did.
Yeah, maybe it could be one of those long time, first times.
He could very well be the eighth listener.
That's what I'm saying. We could have got whatever the percentage growth that makes from 7 to 8 is.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Mind you, Adam Davidson didn't answer that question, what was 4 plus 4, the other week, which means he doesn't listen to the episode, so we could have dropped one off.
Right.
We could have just rounded back up to 7 again. But either way, the lovely Troy Casper sent us an email.
He did.
The first time we've heard from him.
It is.
And so we're dedicating the episode. Well, it could be after this, but we're dedicating the episode to him.
Excellent.
So if you're a long time, no time, listening a long time, never sent us anything kind of person, and would like your own episode named after you, be like Troy.
Exactly. How have you been, anyway? That there, for those who haven't heard before, is Mr. Glyn Lavender from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, and I am Bruce Williams from shuttersincpodcast.com.
Did you say hello to Troy?
I think we've done that.
I mean, I've said hello to him, but I didn't hear you say hello.
Hello, Troy.
That's it. Listeners?
Can we move
Troy,
on?
Troy, listeners. We could make a whole episode of this. This could be just there.
We do have other things to talk about.
probably not as interesting, quite frankly.
So how's your last fortnight been, other than being crook?
Well, last week I was feeling well, lad. Yeah, I spent 3.5 days in bed with a seriously nasty stomach bug.
Right.
So it came out of nowhere. Actually, I don't know where it came from. No, I mean, I got it from I don't know where.
Yeah.
But I know where it all ended up. It was just terrible. That happened to be the night, the same 3 days of the week my wife was away for work.
Oy, oy, oy.
So I took the kids to, I felt a little unwell, had to do some stuff. Yeah, took the kids to school, got home, and that was it. I was bedridden. had to install the mum's network of, can you pick up the kids?
Oh, really?
Can you drop the kids off? Can you pick the kids up? Can you? The kids had to feed themselves, had to clean themselves, had to dress themselves, had to do absolutely, I couldn't get out of bed to even get them a sandwich or anything. I just couldn't do anything for 3 days straight. So that was a really bad ride, a really bad fever, chills. And definitely the worst stomach bug I've had in my entire life, and I've had a couple of doozies.
Wow.
But I must say, my how old am I now? I say my 46-year record of non-vomiting stands.
Right.
Still, so I'm still 46 years. I'm aiming for 50. I'm aiming for the rest of my life. But I'm 46 years in. I think in Latin it's non-vomitus.
Wow.
So even through that nasty stomach bug. Kept it all there.
Wow.
But there's nothing worse. I could kind of lean to my left and watch my Microsoft Surface and watch some Netflix on that. And the point I was feeling the most unwell in the stomach, I turned over, turned on this show, and this guy just does vomiting all over the place. It's like, that's not what you want. That was most unpleasant.
Yeah, right.
But other than that, I've had some good news.
Yeah.
It's in podcast-related good news.
Yeah.
One of our lucky listeners who I talked about 2 weeks ago who might be coming to Tanzania has put the booking through. So one of the 7.
Fantastic.
Well, possibly 8 is coming with us. So it's fabulous. And he's asked me not to mention his name just yet until sort of January. I'm not quite sure. I think he's a bit he'd be rabbiting on about him for the next...
He hasn't told his missus, that's why.
It could be that. No, I think there's some sort of... he gets to go on this, but she gets to go to the Greek islands in Egypt or something. Right. Some sort of arrangement like that. Which is, if he has to go along and do those too, carry the bags and stuff, make it easy for her, and take the camera, some decent stuff to take photos of there too. So, that's lovely. So I've only got 3 spots left. And I'm talking to about five people interested.
Nice.
But, you know, you might get one booking out of those five sort of thing. You never know. So I was thinking I might get the head of Discovery Photo Tours, my good mate Ken Kamineski, to come on and have a chat on the podcast with us.
For sure. Line it up.
I've been thinking this way. I'm going to get a whole bunch of new people to talk to over the next couple of weeks.
Before you go jumping that gun.
Yeah, I suppose it's almost Christmas, isn't it?
I just wanted to say we're only going to get next week will be the last week, and that's assuming we record next week.
Oh, well, that's pretty slack of you, isn't it?
As long as we record next week will be the last episode for the year.
What we could do, we could line up all the interviews. You interview them all.
Yeah.
Like over the next week or so, you can do like 10, 15 interviews, and I'll show up again about May next year.
Yes. That sounds good.
I could do like a few sand bites, a few little bits of derision, a few snarky comments.
And I can just
to make it, you know, you can cut and paste them in. Yeah, exactly. You can have a wah, wah. We could have a little button, have a little one of those little buttons like sound. Like, you know, those guys in the old movies that used to make the sound effects. You could have the glim effects.
Yep.
Oh, that's crap. Oh, Bruce, look what you've done. You call that a photo, Bruce? You just a whole little rush like that and just slip them in. No one would notice.
No, that's right.
Nobody would notice. So lovely. It's lovely to have one of our awesome listeners along. And so what I'd like to do, and I've asked him this yet, is when after the tour, we'll get him on and get him to talk about his experience.
Yeah, definitely.
And that'd be awesome to get that perspective. So, well, on the proviso that's any good.
Yes.
If I feel it didn't go well, we won't get him on. I don't need that sort of bad publicity. No.
I'll be the judge of that.
It's going to be fabulous. And I've just about teed up with Tamron that if anyone from Nikon Canon comes along, they can get a 150 to 600, a 100 to 400, and a 1.4 times converted to loan for the tour as well. So
there's
a fair... Yeah, it's a fair, $3,000 or $4,000 investment in lenses you don't have to commit to on top of the price of the tour. So, so that's pretty cool.
Nice.
But once again, at the moment, only Canon Nikon. But I did see a thing this week in Photo Rumours that apparently Tamron's taken out a patent for a 100 to 400 for Micro Four Thirds.
Wow.
So maybe there's something on the way.
So that'd be the Pentax family?
No, Micro Four Thirds is like most Olympus.
Sorry, Olympus.
Olympus. Panasonic. Yeah.
Olympus, yeah.
Wow. Panasonic, Olympus, and is there somebody else that uses that format? I can't remember. I think there is, but my brain's not functional.
So operating as normal. Does Fujifilm use?
No, Fuji's got their own mount.
Okay. Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So that'd be interesting if that comes out.
Nice.
I'm not sure if it's 100 to 400 on Micro Four Thirds numbers. We should actually make it like a 200 to 800 mil lens.
Right.
Which should be pretty astounding. Or if it's like a 50 to 200, therefore it's equivalent to a 100 to 400. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Yep.
So how's your fortnight been?
Well, 2 weeks ago.
You went on that walk.
I went on my bushwalk.
I saw the photos.
I'm sure you did. They were crap.
Pretty crappy morning, though. Yeah, that's not your fault.
No, that wasn't my fault, but I did make some newbie mistakes, like trying to shoot, like trying to shoot long exposure multi-image panos off a wharf, which happens to jiggle.
Not off a wharf, off a floating wharf.
Yes,
which is very different from a wharf, which are often quite stable.
Right. Yes. Good point. But yes, a floating wharf.
A floating wharf tends to move a little bit.
It's like, oh, how did I fall for that?
How many shots did you do? I mean, how many different setups did you do?
Well, I did 3 in the morning and then 2 in the afternoon. All from the same floating wharf.
That's gold, isn't it?
Seriously. Like, that just goes to show, like, how out of touch I am.
Yeah.
Because I haven't shot for so long.
That's what I was just thinking. It's just simple, you haven't done enough to be back in the zone of thinking about it and... Yeah, you're concentrating on the basics about getting what settings, what kind of layout do I need, all that kind of stuff, I bet.
Yeah.
And you weren't thinking about your practicalities of...
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know why I ended up on the floating wharf, and it was because
you're an
idiot. If I'd gone to the right of where I had shot, where there was, we'll call it a river bank, it was sort of like a sandstone retaining wall, I was conscious of the fact that at the left-hand side of that panorama, I would have ended up with the wharf in the frame. And I think I was thinking of that as being an obstruction to the view, and wasn't considering the possibility that the floating wharf might actually move up and down with the current.
So, oh, God.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, so yeah, and as you saw from the light, it just happened to be a really dull, drab, overcast morning, unlike every other morning on the train when I'm on my way to work, when it is just beautiful sunshine.
Always the way.
Yeah, but the walk was really good. I did think to myself as I was on my way back. Because this was a long walk. It ended up to be about 14 kilometres. Yeah. And I was in the Brisbane Water National Park. And I would say that for 70 to 75% of the walk, I was in an area where there was no mobile phone coverage. I was by myself. And this is an area with no vehicular access. Your only way in and out is via the train or boat on the river. So if I had come to grief in any way, shape or form, no one would have found me. No one would have been able to track my cell phone. And on the way back, I almost trod on a red-bellied black. And I saw the last meter of it disappear under a bush about 3 feet in front of me. And it was about that time that I started to think, maybe this wasn't the best thought-out plan.
You need an EPIRB.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anyway.
Man, it's amazing that you can be that close to a major city and be still that isolated, isn't it?
Yeah. There are cell phone towers that sort of track the highway, and you needed to be up on the top of the ridge line or on the western side of the mountain to have line of sight to those cell towers. And, of course, the majority of this walk was on the eastern side of that ridge, and so you were sort of blocked by landmass above you. But, hey, I had a great time. I loved being out in the bush. I enjoyed the solitude and the sounds of nature, and it was great. It was nice.
Good on you, dude.
Yeah.
Was there a cave or something?
Pindar Cave, which was the whole point of going on that walk, which is not a cave in the traditional sense of a cave that you walk into and go underground. It's more like a big rock overhang. But fairly sizable. Like, I reckon you could fit 300-400 people in underneath that overhang. It's quite big and probably 50 metres long, and all of the roof is blackened from thousands of years of campfires and whatnot. So it was nice.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and pretty remote.
Did you get a bit of an eerie feeling when you're out there by yourself?
I wouldn't say eerie. I love that idea of being where very few people bother to go.
Yeah.
You know, I love that as a photographer, the idea of just going somewhere where most people just couldn't be asked. Going to
there
that
no
much
cave
effort.
Paintings. It was just some blackened.
Certainly no ancient cave paintings. There was bit of graffiti, but not
Jono 1973.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. But thankfully, not a whole lot of it. There was only a couple of bits. But it was certainly a very remote location, and you know, not a place that would be visited very often. I wouldn't imagine. So
speaking of remote locations.
Yeah.
Just before I came on air with you tonight,
I
was reading this thing that kind of blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
Right? That there's parts of the Atacama Desert in Chile.
Right.
Where it hasn't rained for between 23 and 40 million years.
Yikes.
40 million years without a drop of rain. That just blows my mind.
Wow. So is there no vegetation at all?
Well, what there is and the reason what the article I was reading on was these NASA engineers are studying the area where it hasn't rained for these tens of millions of years because there's life.
Right.
But life without water. So there's lichen. There's some very small patches of lichen in different areas that somehow manage to sustain a living colony
with
no rainfall.
That lichen survives purely on whatever moisture is in the air, which wouldn't be a whole lot.
I'm assuming there's no moisture in the air because it's the soil is completely dead. It's completely barren. They're saying there's less microbes per square meter in some of these areas than you'll find in a sterile hospital
wing. Wow.
Yeah. So we're talking about wow. Not an area where there's a lot of life or a lot of air moisture going on.
Wow.
And they're basically using they're capturing sort of this lichen and pulverizing it and checking its DNA and trying to figure out how it does what it does.
Yeah.
As they said, if they find life on Mars.
Yep.
This is possibly the type of stuff they're going to find.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because they say, yeah, they've found that, you know, life is very hard to snuff out.
Yeah.
You go to the volcanic vents at the bottom of the ocean and there's life. Yeah.
Yep.
You go to the most harshest areas on the planet and there's still life.
Yeah.
A la this place. Yeah. So they're saying if there's anything left living on Mars, if there ever was once life,
yep,
then there's a fair chance it'll be in this kind of area.
Wow.
And by chance, just this week, NASA's InSight probe landed on Mars.
Yep.
In a big open expanse area, somewhat like I'd imagine the Atacama Desert would be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to go insert. It's going to start digging down and doing all sorts of other tests. So who knows what they may come up with.
Nice.
But I thought that just totally irrelevant to photography, but still interesting, which is good.
Well, we've seen the first images back from InSight already, so that's a photography-related thing.
It is, yeah, good point, yeah. The first one, they had a bit of dust on the sensor.
Yes.
And taking the dust cover off, yeah, it was all just specs. But still. Yeah. But it's on to photography stuff.
Yep.
I've had a funny week of getting to debates with people, it's online arguments.
Right.
One, of all things, is about how I believe that, let's put it this way. A good photographer friend of mine posted a thing on Facebook saying he just had a situation where he was at a winery in Tasmania where he'd been accosted by a group of half a dozen girls, incredibly drunk, made him really, really uncomfortable. They were really inappropriate. They were really insulting. They were all over him. There were inappropriate comments. And he's saying if this was men doing this, he'd be locked up and all this sort of stuff. And he was getting quite upset by it all. And then 20 or 30 men came on his page and, oh, terrible, these women, blah, 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 blah. And I got on and I said, look, whilst this is not to be condoned in any way, shape or form, know that that's a fairly isolated incident by comparison to how many times women have been in a similar sort of situation,
yeah,
or how many times women in workplaces have been uncomfortable or walking down the street and the looks and the wall. Yeah. Maybe we should put some outrage to that side of the argument as well, as opposed to these very isolated incidents with men.
Yeah.
Not that I condone the behavior and if Cam felt uncomfortable, really bad. So this obviously divorced father came on board with all these statistics and about how bad men have it and how good women have it. And that men are the most, the six fathers a day are committing suicide in Australia. And it's all because women lie about violence orders and more men are killed by women than women are killed by men. Going on. So I had this debate for about 7 hours with this guy. Once again, not photography related, but my goodness, it just, but it certainly showed like the internet, you can get any information you want to support almost any argument.
Yes.
And so he's pulling all this data out, like there's 200,000 homeless men in Australia was one of his arguments, because women kick the men out, basically. So which I went back saying, well, there's only a known 116,000 homeless people in total in Australia, of which you're saying there's 200,000 of them are men. And he goes, those statistics are lies, go check out the Australian Bureau of Statistics. And I said, well, that's where I got it from.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. And he's complained that women get more funding for sexual and mental and physical abuse than men do. So I pulled up the graphics saying that they get four times as much funding, but four times as many women get.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't have that. He says, that's all lies, and it's the domestic violence media. And I'm saying, are you a Trump supporter? I mean, no offense to Trump supporters, but they had that sort of conspiracy theory, fake news about everything sort of stuff. So that was an interesting. So that was going on. And on the same day, I started having this discussion about photography, because this guy I know, these two guys I know and another guy I don't know, started this business where basically they're going to be the marketing and lead generation hub for a new wedding business.
Okay.
And the wedding business is basically you go on contract to them, they pay you a flat $600. That's how much you earn.
To shoot a wedding.
To shoot a wedding, you earn $600.
Okay.
Out of which, of course, you've got to take your tax if you're actually paying tax.
Yep.
8 hours of work for $600. But then you've got to get home from the wedding and sort through all your photos, discard all the bad ones, and upload all the other ones, the other thousands of images that night to their Zenfolio site. So all images must be, because the promise this company's making is you'll have your wedding photos ready to download the next day.
What?
The next day. So they charge $16.95 for the wedding.
Right.
Of which the photographer gets $600.
Yeah.
And for that $1,095, they generate the leads, they book the clients, they assign the jobs, they take on the personal liability insurance, all that sort of stuff. I've got no problem with the business model. The business model, yeah, people want to do it for $600 and effectively lose money.
Yep.
Yeah, they're working less than the average wage.
Peanuts, at least.
Yeah. And it's
I'm thinking of the handful of weddings that I've shot. I've never finished before midnight.
Well, their thing is that they're capped 8 hours. They don't shoot any longer than 8 hours.
Right. So, okay.
Yeah, if your wedding day involves getting ready photos through to say getting ready at 10 o'clock in the morning, which a lot of brides do.
Yep.
Say it's a 2 o'clock wedding, they're going to start getting ready about 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning. Okay.
Yep.
The photographer's not going to be there for that.
Right.
So you're not going to get any, because if your wedding goes from say 2 till 3, and then you've got to have your photos taken, and the reception starts at 6 till 8, you've only got it from 12 till 8 because you've got 8 hours with them. That's it.
Yeah.
You know? So it's at $1,650, and you can pay installments. That's going to help people, which is good too. And there's also an option for an extra $300 to get a 25x25, 50-page wedding photo book with 200 images.
Right.
All done for you, yeah?
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking, that wasn't where my debate came from. And I've had a lot of people, there's been a lot of heated argument on the varying professional sites and so on, because two of the three people who have set up this business used to run the Australian Institute of Professional Photography.
Right.
Okay. So right. They were the aspirational organization for photographers to improve their skills, to become grandmasters, to all that sort of stuff that's important to those sort of people.
And hopefully maintain some credibility in the industry.
Yeah. And to be a member, you have to be showing that you're doing professional development every year. You get certain points for attending workshops and talks and so on.
Yeah.
So you have to keep up your education to maintain your membership. You know, your quality of work doesn't hold you in just by itself.
Yeah.
So the third person is the guy who used to run the best photo lab in the world.
Wow.
Where it was prided on nothing but the best possible quality.
Right.
So you've got people who've gone, and what kind of rank, what made me ask this question on Facebook was that the most recent head of the AIPP, who has got out, I think, in February this year, said this in an article. It's my view that a modern SLR camera is capable of taking a shot that is absolutely fine. If you set the camera to P mode, about 85% of the images will be sharp, in focus, and well exposed with the right color balance and white balance. Photographers just have to frame the image. Then, with the other 15% where images can be improved, some swift post-processing actions can be applied. So he's nutting down professional wedding photographers. Their business model is point and shoot. Let the camera do all the work. All you got to do is frame stuff. And the ones that are really bad, we'll just run an action over.
I'm going to be controversial and say I agree with the first half of the statement.
I have no disagreement that a camera on P can most of the time get the exposure right. I've got no problem with that either.
Yeah.
But not for a professional.
But I don't think that's...
Because a camera on P can't choose depth of field.
No.
A camera on P can't choose a slow shutter speed for an effect. A camera on P can only take a picture. It can't take a photograph.
Yeah.
And once again, I have no problem if that's what their wedding photography business is.
Yeah.
It's happy snaps, basically. Yeah. And they've already got, I think, 60 or 80 photographers signed up. And they're vetting who they'll sign. So the people have got to have a certain amount of ability to shoot. But they plan to have about 300 photographers on their books by middle of next year.
Yeah, right.
Now, how they generate enough weddings to satisfy 300 photographers is another matter altogether.
Well, but, you know, I think they, you know, I don't think they're going to have trouble finding clients simply because of the price point and the speed point.
Well, you know, see, I don't think the price point's that good. Because it's $2,000 effectively with a book, and there's plenty of weekend warriors doing it for half that price.
Yeah, but the common thing you hear about the weekend warriors is that they shot my wedding 6 months ago and I'm still waiting for the images.
Yeah, but you get that from a seasoned professional too. Yeah,
and I think that the goodwill of the three names involved is
probably... Oh, but that don't mean anything to anybody out there. The people who will be buying these weddings, these people have no idea that.
I will bet, without having looked into it, I will bet they will all trade off their past glories in their marketing. And that will sway some people. But I think the big swaying part of it all is going to be you're going to have your photos the next day before you head off on your honeymoon. And for a lot of people...
On their website, there's no real mention of the three owners.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Because let's face it, you're not getting them doing your wedding.
No. True.
And here's the other thing too. You probably don't know who you're getting to shoot your wedding until the day
Yes. It's unreal. You'll probably have
no meetings with them because you wouldn't be meeting with anybody.
No.
The one big plus is if someone happens, as they say on the website, if someone eats a dodgy prawn one day and they're too sick to shoot your wedding the next day, they've got backup.
Yes.
Yeah, which is good. Yeah. Yes. And that's a nice peace of mind thing to have. No, I just think what really balked me is that you've gone from telling everyone for many, many years that they must aspire to be better.
Yeah.
They must to stand out above the crowd. And they say they're not trying to target that market, and I know they're not because they can't with this business model.
Yeah.
But to denigrate photography to the point of, hey, all you got to do is frame it.
It's one step above iPhone weddings, isn't it?
Well, it kind of is, you know. I phoned in with an Instagram filter, you know. But, yeah, so it's getting a lot of – but once again, I have no qualms about their business model because, hey, if there's a market for it, they'll succeed.
Yep.
If there's no market for it, they'll fail.
Yeah.
Yeah, the market will show whether it's going to be – whether it works or not.
Yep.
And the market will say whether the price point's right or the price point. But I just don't see – as a photographer – you can't afford to replace your gear at that price.
No.
Yeah, if that's your only income from your weddings. And they're saying, oh, you know, we can a savvy photographer can do three weddings a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So they're earning $1,800 a week.
Yeah.
But if they are earning $1,800 a week, they're paying $600, well, $500 of it in tax.
Yep.
Then they've got to, live.
Yep.
And they've got to replace all that gear.
Yeah.
That gear's going to run. If you're shooting, let's face it, you're shooting 3,000 photos each wedding.
Yep.
So that's let's round up to it, even 10,000 photos a weekend you're shooting.
Yep.
Now, your average high-end amateur camera is good for about 80 to 100,000 shots before the shutter kicks out.
Right.
So that's 10 weeks. Yeah. Your average pro camera is probably good for...
a quarter of a mil.
Yeah, 250,000 to 300,000, we'll say around there.
Yep.
So that's two cameras a year.
Yep.
You're going to replace.
Yeah.
At $4,500 a piece. That's $10,000 a year just in cameras you've got to replace.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not saying, droppage. And I'm sure insurance, but insurance doesn't cover for
wear and
faults
tear.
For wear and tear.
No.
So, yeah, you might have your lenses, but insurance costs.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't see how anyone's going to make any money out of it.
No.
Other than the guys running the business. Yeah.
Yep.
But hey, time will tell. But it was certainly a very interesting shift in the wedding world in Australia this last week. So I thought I'd mention that. So we'll keep an eye out and we'll see how developments go and keep bringing it up as if anything interesting happens.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got on your list?
I've got not a lot.
Yeah. Well.
I mean, like almost nothing.
Okay. Shouldn't take that long, then.
I did see this. This is the modern world gone nuts.
Okay.
I'm calling it the eye jacket, just because I'm an eye idiot. But this company called, I don't know how to pronounce it, COOPH, COOPH,
right.
COOPH, has come out with a photographer's vest, which is quite dapper looking. It looks a bit like,
it's a puffer jacket. In a vest.
Puffer jacket style things, yeah. But it's got built-in heating
that
can be controlled via an app.
Right.
So you can control which bits get hot. You can turn temperatures up and down. You can, yeah.
Right.
It can tell when the app's turned on if you're walking or doing any sort of movement and exercise. It'll reduce the heat coming out of it. If you're stationary, it'll increase the heat.
I'm thinking Mark Chapman up in Rockhampton. You need one of these.
Oh, he needs it cooling down. He's an ice vest. Yeah. It's 44 degrees or something there at the moment. Exactly. You know? It's about to be evacuated, I think, you know.
Yeah, well, they're moving 8,000 people into Rockhampton out of one of the smaller towns. I can't remember which town it was now that they're evacuating. Is it Deepwater or is it the other joint? But, yeah.
Don't know.
8,000 people, and it's a compulsory evacuation.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not even a recommendation anymore. It's no, you are leaving.
Yeah, so for those who don't live in Australia,
yeah.
We've had some pretty wild weather this week. Sydney, where you guys are from, we've had some pretty fair bit of rainfall, I'm told.
We had 6 weeks' worth of November average rainfall in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Queensland, it's in the mid-40s and burning.
Queensland's in the 110s, and I think they had 128 fires burning or something like that.
136 was the last I saw.
There you go. So quite, and on a scale to these California fires, but because it's such sparse area, you know, you haven't got tens of thousands of homes destroyed like in California. You've got four cows and a kangaroo or something.
But covering a 1,600-kilometre stretch of coastline.
I had to feel sorry for my mate Andrew Hall from Fuji yesterday. So yesterday Andrew had to fly from Sydney to Rockhampton.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So let me read you his day.
I can imagine.
Finally made it to Rockhampton, 44 degrees, surrounded by bushfires, and the taxi driver says to me, "How was your day?" So I told him. 4 a.m. alarm. 5:15 arrive at airport. 5:35 get moved to earlier flight to hopefully beat the storm and make my Rockhampton connection. 5:45 storm beats everyone and airport operations closed, suspended. 5:55 raisin toast and latte. 6 o'clock witnessed a heated argument between two business executives over whose pancake came out of the automatic pancake machine first. No, really. 6:15, another latte. 6:45, considered a third latte, but the line was too long. 7:30, airport reopens, but only one runway in use. 7:55, new boarding time for my 6:30 scheduled flight. 8:10, my new boarding time. 8:20, my actual boarding time. 9 o'clock, push back from gates. 10:30, arrive in Brisbane. 9:30, adjust to Queensland time. 8:20 original connection to Rockhampton, missed.
Yep.
2:15 new connection time to Rockhampton. 1:50 boarding time for a new flight to Rockhampton. 12:30 thunderstorm hits Brisbane Airport and all operations suspended. 12:35 make ham and cheese toasty in the lounge and avoid having another coffee. 12:49 have another coffee and an iced Vovo biscuit. 2:10 new boarding time for Rockhampton. 2:25 actual boarding time for Rockhampton. 2:45 push back from gates. 4:30 arrive in Rockhampton. 4:40 listen to bushfire evacuation orders for a town 10 kilometres away. What a day.
Oh, man, that's insane.
That makes my trip to New York the other week seem like a breeze.
Walk in the park.
Yes. And the only plane that got out of Sydney yesterday, the head of KL Australia came down to Melbourne yesterday.
Right.
And he was on like the big Dreamliner airplane.
Yep.
It was the only plane that was big enough to take off in the storm.
Wow.
And he said the flight was so bad. I mean, so bad. That even that big plane had a real troubles just handling it.
Yeah, right.
So, crazy weather.
Wow.
Good thing there's no such thing as global warming. That's really lucky. The stable weather. So anyway, so this vest works with your iPhone. What a joke.
Fantastic.
Stupid world are we living in? Then I'm going to skip the next piece because I noticed there's a little piece that I think Adam sent through that my next article belongs to. I'll come back to that in a minute.
Oh, okay.
But my last one was great little bit of fun in the park.
Okay.
There's a 1.25-minute video of a woman going off tap at a photographer trying to shoot a family Christmas shoots in a park.
What?
And the woman's just going off tap at it. It's like, you were here yesterday and you were here last weekend and this is not your studio, you know.
What?
Just going absolutely livid at this woman using the local park for her photo studio for her Santa sessions or whatever it is.
What?
Now, I've got to say, and I was saying this to my wife before I came online, as funny as this video was, I've often got a bit peeved at these fitness bloody organisations using my local area, my local park where I'm trying to walk with the dog that I don't have.
Yeah.
And it's surrounded by all this fitness equipment they've brought out. And there's people, you know, basically running a gym in the park.
Yeah.
So they're getting the space for free. And that's what's kind of aggrieved me somewhat because I'm a cranky bugger. Yeah. You know? I know you haven't noticed. And so this is the first time I've ever sort of thought, yeah, well, yeah, maybe people think photographers are the same way. Yeah, we're taking advantage of this public space to do that photos. So maybe you have to find a bit of more secluded land rather than right out next to the kiddie swing set or something. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
But it's a funny video to watch, so right. I thought I'd put it in there. Yes, we always like a bit of fun. So you got some Sony rumours.
Yes.
Being the Sony man.
So I saw this pop out on the interwebs probably 4 or 5 days ago, and I ignored it the first time I saw it, but then I happened to notice 2 or 3 other sites had picked it up. And allegedly, it's from somebody who has contributed to the Sony Alpha Rumors site in the past and has always been 100% accurate with his predictions. And this prediction is that Sony is working on 2 new sensors. Sensor number 1 is going to be 60 megapixels. And what I think's exciting, 16-bit RAW.
Yeah.
My aging dinosaur of an A850 is only 10-bit RAW, 12 if you shoot in non-motor drive, 4.6 frames a second at 16-bit, 12 frames a second at 14-bit, will shoot 8K video at 30p at 12-bit. And then there's a second sensor, 36 megapixels, again, 16-bit RAW, and on-chip phase detect autofocus. So I don't know how that works. I don't know how the autofocus is dependent on the chip. I would have thought, I don't know.
Who knows?
Anyway, so
I don't understand technology.
Yeah, fair enough. So anyway, there's lots of speculation there about when and what cameras will get the tech and blah, blah, blah. But apparently the source of those rumours is a credible source. So
cool.
Yeah. The other thing that I saw, this master of street photography knows how to capture the right moment. And this was a fantastic series of images, just candid street photography stuff. But this guy has obviously seen things unfolding and managed to get himself into the right position and have his camera set up to capture these great images that just, they're phenomenal. If they really are spontaneous shots, he's done really, really well. Part of me kind of wonders whether some of them were contrived and staged, but yeah, some very interesting stuff. Have you had a look at any of these?
Yeah, I've just had a little flick through there now, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like the yellow walking cane that makes for an arrow.
Yeah, that's probably the best of the bunch.
Yeah.
But you got to think that, I don't know. You kind of almost have to think that's... And the one below I kind of like with the eyes staring at the flame. It's like she's shooting flame daggers at the person next door. That's kind of funny, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Some pretty good... That's some good stuff. I mean, I've got no... Yeah, it's well seen.
Yeah, well, that was my thing, was if these are not contrived shots and he really has just seen these opportunities and managed to capture them, then I take my hat off to him because he's done well.
Yeah.
So now we should get on to the one story submitted by the namesake of this episode.
Dun, dun, dun.
Troy Casper. Who we've not heard from before. Troy, thanks for writing in, mate. Form an orderly queue, recreating the perfect Instagram photo in New Zealand. And this is a story about this one peak that everyone likes to get a photo of themselves standing, arms outstretched, on this little peak of land with this beautiful vista that fades off into the distance. And the behind-the-scenes shot is kind of what gives it all away. There's about 30 or 40 people all lined up, all waiting to have their chance.
The same shot.
Yeah.
It's crazy how that stuff happens, isn't it? You know? I said that happened. We A couple of months ago, when I was shooting for that for Tamron with that lens,
yep.
We went to this iconic beach hut stand in Melbourne, but there's only one that has an Australian flag on, and there was a queue of about 60 people long, all lined up patiently waiting for their turn to have their photo in front of this Australian. It's like, man, that's just madness.
It kind of reminds me of that story we covered a couple of episodes ago about Antelope Canyon in, is that Utah? Antelope Canyon?
Elia Licardi.
Oh, I can't remember who it was, but basically they were saying that they'd gone on the tour to go through Antelope Canyon because you always see these beautiful shots of Antelope Canyon with the way the light filters down through it and you get all these beautiful oranges and purples. And it turns out that there's like 100 bloody photographers all squeezed in trying to get the same shot at the same time. And, you know, they throw the sand in the air to give you that nice, you know, and it's just like, oh, wow. It kind of takes all the fun out of it.
Well, that's the thing. You see that you go to Iceland and you're in a queue of 300 people taking the same shots and stuff.
For the waterfall.
So it's like.
Troy, thank you very much for that one, mate.
Thanks. Thank you very much for writing in, and we hope you like the episode. It's it's up there with some of our most average, normal level quality
stuff.
With some
of our others.
You've come at a peak, basically.
Rob Coates and Adam both submitted this one. Rob Coates said, "G'day, Inks. Found this on the ABC news site." And this was on abc.net.au. And it's the story of this guy who, where was he from? I think he was from Denmark, if I remember correctly. Yeah, Denmark. He lives in Dubbo, out in the middle of New South Wales. And he is now one of only four people in Australia who has the skills and is still active in dismantling and reassembling vintage cameras. And this guy has got this amazing collection of old cameras, and he's created a system, and I had to have a little chuckle, not an Excel spreadsheet. No, this guy has cards, like an old library card system. For every camera.
The Dewey Decimal System.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. So he's got this card system for every camera he's ever worked on. So if a camera comes to him to be serviced, he can look, and even if it's a really obscure camera, he can look back through his card system and see whether or not he's ever had one of these in his possession in the past. And if he did, he's taken all these notes on how, because in lieu of an owner's manual, obviously. And, it's just a phenomenal story. And he's lifelong enthusiast, has a fine collection of original pocket cameras,
man.
The oldest of which is more than a century old. So, yeah, what a great story. He reckons he's repaired over 30,000 cameras in his day.
So, and they say they don't build things like they used to. Well, see, the old stuff breaks down all the time too.
Yeah.
That's all that says to me. That's what we call unreliability.
Yeah. Carl Hemmings wrote in to say, "Hi, Bruce and Glyn. I can still upgrade iOS on my 2010 Mac." I think that was in relation to something we were talking about in the last
episode. Yeah, you said you didn't think that. You made a dig at Apple saying you can't update the software in iOS. Right. I'm saying, well, I can still update mine on my 2009. I'm a year older even than Carl's and still updates. So,
And Adam sent us a bunch of stories. The first was the forthcoming book, Vivian Meyer, The Colour Work, which is a new 240-page hardcover book containing over 150 of Meyer's colour photographs. For those who are not familiar, Vivian Meyer was a street photographer in New York City. She died and left behind a collection of, 30,000 negatives in her estate, which she had done nothing with in her lifetime.
That's not true. She'd put them in shoeboxes.
Yeah, exactly. And a 26-year-old real estate agent bought the whole collection for $400.
No, he bought a part of. So there's lots of little bits.
Oh, was it broken up into parcels, was it?
Yeah, there was quite a few parcels of it at different times, but I know he kept on buying more bits,
right?
Over the time, but it was certainly an amazing collection. So it's a great documentary, Finding Vivian Meyer or something it's called,
right?
Which is definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, so a large proportion of her work was black and white, but she did also apparently shoot some colour stuff. So yeah, there's a book about to come out called The Colour Work. So for those that are interested.
A lot of them scanned by my mate Paul Atkins from Atkins Technicolour in Adelaide.
Is that right?
It is, yeah.
Wow. What, so they sent all the negs over here?
Well, he was doing a whole batch of them, yeah.
Yeah, right.
There's so many, and there's only so, and it's volunteer work.
Right.
So he's volunteering, you know, to get the things into a permanent protected record. Right. He's been doing it for years.
Yeah, right. Wow. The next one is the story behind that IKEA photo of Amsterdam. This image, if you go to the Shutters Inc. blog post and have a look, is one that you will have no doubt seen. It's available as a...
Only if you've been to IKEA.
Yeah, if you've been into an IKEA store, you've probably seen it. This image now lives in 427,000 homes around the planet. It's kind of like a... almost like an IKEA stock image, if you like. They've printed it on canvases and prints and all sorts of things, and you can buy it as wall art in an IKEA store just about anywhere on the planet. And it turns out that the guy who shot it died in the 2004 tsunami.
Oh, really?
In the Indian Ocean, yeah. And the guy who's written this blog post on Petapixel has created this little 14-minute doco about how he tried to find the story behind this particular photo. You know, eventually, you know, found out the name of the photographer, and then as he tried to track this guy down, ended up getting in touch with his brother and finding out that the photographer in question had died in the tsunami. And, wow. Yeah, and there's this whole story behind this image. And, yeah, it's quite an interesting story. Apparently, they had a bit of a falling out between them, and he took this photo and sent it to his brother as a print or something as a way to say, sorry about the argument we had.
And his brother said, stuff you, I'm going to sell this to IKEA.
Yeah, something like that. So, yeah, very interesting. Next one. I saw this a couple of times through the week. Harvard makes nano surface that fixes chromatic aberration in lenses. Oh. Now, I've read the story, and I think, you know, my understanding of it, it kind of sounds a little bit like the way a polarizing lens works, but... maybe just a little bit different. Basically, they've created this surface like a filter with these nano, almost like pillars, if you like, that stand up vertically. And if I understand it correctly, what they do is restrict the fastest moving parts of the light so that all of the light arrives at the lens or at the sensor at the same time, and it reduces chromatic aberration. That's my understanding of it based on what I read. If I've misunderstood it, my apologies. But it sounds...
What if you want chromatic aberration? Can you turn it off?
I guess you take the filter off, Glenn.
Oh.
Why would you want the chromatic aberration?
Oh, something to look nice with a little purple halo.
Like Prince.
But, you know, you've got one button press in Photoshop gets rid of it too.
Well, there's that too.
Pretty much.
But, you know, but it's still, the whole get it right in camera thing, mate.
I forget that for a joke. Fix it in Photoshop is my motto.
That's right.
Make it till you make it.
That's it. The next one is making a splash in toy photography. And this was a story about a guy who uses little toy models and integrates water into his photographs because he loves the way a splash of water, as in, you know, flying drops of water, creates some action and some movement in images. And so what he's using is a can of compressed air with the little straw nozzle that focuses quite finely the blast of air, and he blasts that into the water around these toys and gets these sort of macro shots of toys interacting with water that's in motion, and it creates these great images that look like the toys are in motion.
Now, do you know what's kind of freaky about that?
What's that?
Is that article came out, and what's the main picture in that article?
SpongeBob. Oh, yes!
And the SpongeBob it's SquarePants is the image that's being used, and it came out on the day that the creator died.
Yes, I did see that
some
yesterday.
Some sort of weird coincidence, isn't it, hey?
Yeah, very. But anyway, there's a great collection of images in that story for anyone that wants to check that out. And the last one from Adam was new preset converter lets you use your Lightroom presets in Capture One. So for anyone who's Well, I guess there's somebody who's looking to make the jump away from Lightroom. And if Capture One is your destination of choice and you have a whole bunch of presets that you've created in Lightroom, then this is certainly worth checking out because it does a fairly decent job of converting your presets from Lightroom to Capture One compatible format.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, my last piece, which I actually thought, because I didn't read your stuff, of course.
Right.
Was where you said the master of street photography knows how to capture the right moment.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was referring to a article on Henri Cartier-Bresson.
Oh, and it wasn't.
Because there was a little 1 minute 10 clip going on about him this week and basically how do you be taught to see.
Right.
And whilst his quote is nothing worth really going on about or wanting to look at, is an excerpt from about an hour and 10 long documentary with him,
right,
which has some really interesting moments and really, really poignant moments. It was filmed, you know, close to the end of his life.
Oh, okay.
And where I think he was reflecting with some melancholy on that passing and the passing of his fellow photographers who he'd grown up with and that sort of stuff. And so it's interesting to look at.
Okay.
So if you have a bit of an interest in either Henry or street photography or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Worth a bit of an hour and 10 of your time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's it, dude.
Excellent. We are done.
The Troy Casper episode comes to an end.
It does.
Kind of felt like any other one, really, didn't it? I thought it was going to be special. I thought it might elevate us. But, yeah. Oh, it did, but we got in the elevator and went down the basement.
Right.
Didn't go up.
All right, mate. So what's on for the rest of your week?
Well, probably a couple of naps. I've got a couple of things. Just lots of things. I was talking to the lovely people at Godox today in Australia.
Yeah.
And if anyone's looking at buying any Godox flash stuff here in Australia or some X-Lite lighting accessories, like, you know, umbrellas, softbox, that sort of stuff, I've got a 10% discount code if you want it. So
nice.
Just drop me a line and I'll get you a code if that's of interest.
I thought maybe you were trying to flog off your freebies.
Oh, well, I'm open to offers. Anything above retail is good. And I just started this week. Up until December 24, I'm offering for the first time ever my half-price one-on-ones as a gift voucher for next year.
Right.
So if anyone I'm doing either one-on-one, two-on-one, or three-on-one, so you can share the cost out just for yourself or you and a friend or you and a couple of friends.
Yep.
Half price to any mutually agreed date upon for 2019.
Nice.
First time ever, only up till December 24. Message me if you want to join up on that. I did a one-on-one the other day. First time ever I did a one-on-one travel photography one-on-one. Where she wanted to get the tips of how to do travel photography better.
Right.
So it was quite challenging.
Yeah. So you were trying to do that in Melbourne?
Well, yeah, people travel to Melbourne.
Yeah.
it's a nice city. But yeah,
what I meant by that is that it would be challenging as a tutor to try and view your hometown as a travel destination because you're so used to it.
I don't personally think so. Because, I mean, it wasn't so much about the location as opposed to the thought processes.
Sure.
And the visual clues and then maximizing locations, utilizing lights, learning how lenses work, how to see the world.
Yep.
So, because you're trying to teach that stuff, you're forced to look at everything fairly critically, not just glance at stuff, you know.
Yep.
So it was a tough day. To try and do that for 5 straight hours is fairly mind-numbing. Not in a bad way, but I pass on a hell of a lot of information.
Right.
And it kind of gets a little much maybe towards the end. But she liked it so much, she's thinking about coming to Tanzania, so it must have been okay.
Nice.
But, yeah, so that was an interesting and fun day for me. And
cool.
So if you want to avail yourself of such a wondrous experience of hanging out with me for a day, drop me a line.
Fantastic.
Hey.
All righty. Well, we will.
You're going to enjoy the rest of your week?
Yep.
Yeah, we got one last episode next week,
yes.
You say?
Yep.
That's right. Then
next
the kids
week.
On school holidays already. God.
Well,
December 7th, school holidays. All the other schools around my area, the kids go off on December 21. My kid's 2 weeks early.
Ripped off.
I'll tell you what. Disgraceful. Anyway.
All right, mate. Well,
have a lovely
good
week.
Yep.
Well, I'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
Bye, Troy.
shuttersincpodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.